good friend of mine on my advisory council, and they'll take it away. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. We're going to talk about what's happening on campuses and greening of campuses. And I've got three colleagues here. Andres Edwards, who's co-director of the Center for Regenerative Design at the College of Marin and also the author of The Sustainability Revolution, which I hope they have in the bookstore along with my books. Dr. Fran White, who's been the who's the president of the College of Marin and is just a great person with a great vision for what a community college can be. And then we have Ron Barthelman, who is the on-site architect, the district architect with Steinberg Architects. So let me get started. I'll go first. We'll each talk for no more than 8 minutes, and then we have some time left for dialogue. In colleges, universities, and communities, a new movement is building that I believe is that has the potential to equal the environmental, the civil rights, and the anti-war movements of the 1960s and 70s. The sustainability movement has a foothold in corporations and government, but its effectiveness depends on remaining a broadly based grassroots movement built on civic initiative and the exercise of our responsibilities as citizens to work together to build a livable, alive, healthy, diverse communities that connect us to the natural world and do not deplete the planet's resources or add to global warming and other forms of planetary damage. And I got to hand it to Kevin. I've known Kevin a long time, but what Global Exchange is doing through events like that, is exactly building the kind of community that we need to see. I see a key difference between the movements of the 60s and the 70s and today is the earlier movements were largely populated and activated by a generation of people then in their teens and 20s who are now the what we call the boomers in their 50s and 60s. What I notice in national and local politics and in the sustainability movement is that young folks are conspicuously missing. To me, the wonder about this event is that's not true. So there's something that we need to learn from how this is organized that's bringing out the folks that we don't see at meetings in Marin County boards and everywhere else. And you know, they seem to be turned off or plugged into their iPod or whatnot. I go to a lot of meetings of planning commissions, local agency commissions, board meetings at the College of Marin and other county boards and commissions, as well as events sponsored by our Center for Regenerative Design, which, by the way, take a look at our website, greenmarin.net, because we have monthly talks, and we'll give you a special bonus if you're under 30. And there have been some really wonderful people like Kevin who's spoken there. I do see that young people seem turned off to politics and civic engagement. And in talking to them, they say it seems boring, depressing, and irrelevant to their lives, as does much of their education. While there are many dedicated people involved in teaching and administering public schools, much of the education feels irrelevant to kids. Having worked in primary schools, high schools, and taught at UC Berkeley for 35 years, the reasons seem clear. The old taxonomy based on separate areas of information or knowledge divided into discrete and unconnected subjects and courses and taught largely through lectures, books, and testing is not the world that kids experience in the rest of their lives. We only love what we understand, and we only develop understanding through direct experience and action, making connections between different kinds of understanding and experience. You know, the ultimate question for young people, for all of us today, is what do I really care about, and how can I live a life that shows it? I think that's what's so exciting about, you know, this vast display of stuff downstairs, because you can begin to at least ask some questions. What do I care about, or what do I care about consuming, at least? What kind of a world do I envision and want to create? That's the ultimate design question we need to address at every level, from family to block to neighborhood to city to region and nation and planet. It allows us to create a vision and work towards it. As Alan Kay says, the best way to create the future is to invent it. Years ago, I worked with Frank Gehry, the now renowned architect, Sister Doreen Nelson, who ran a program called City Build in what the LA school system considered to be the bottom performing rung of LA schools, mostly in Southwest LA. And what she did is she had middle school kids build scale models of their neighborhoods, figure out how they could be improved, and then redesign them. And the work was truly amazing. Their work was original, relevant, inspiring, and would put the work of most developers and city planners to shame. It feels to me like most institutionalized learning is designed to underestimate a student's intelligence, that is, in grasping truths, relationships, and meanings. I tested that theory one year by giving a fourth grade class the same problems as that I gave to a freshman architecture class at Berkeley, who was supposed to be the brightest of the brightest, in analyzing thermal flows in the school building through using these little Hobies, these little electronic things you can put anywheres and map out temperature. The fourth graders did as well as the Berkeley freshmen in this exercise. I gave a high school class the same problem as a graduate architecture and landscape design class. That was to map a 700-acre site, namely the school, which is over in Marin, San Domenico School, to map their boundaries, the topography, create different maps of boundaries, topography, geology, soils, vegetation, hydrology, and solar access. And the high school students outperformed the graduate class. The sad part of it is that the school was undergoing a big master planning phase. The drawings were all in the library, but then they went out and hired a firm that for $140,000 did exactly the same work the students had done. It's like no one believes that you don't have to be a genius to do this stuff. You can just figure it out. So we have a massive opportunity to involve a younger generation in redesigning and remaking the world they live in and that you will inherit. Design itself is a great connector of separate areas of knowledge because good design at all level integrates everything. How do you design a house or a town so that it produces its own electricity, grows some of its own fresh vegetables, recycles its wastes and water built of local materials? What kinds of places promote learning, direct communication, and good health? How do we create spaces that people want to gather and learn in? Places that connect people to their inner spirit and also experience their connection to the living world they are part of. Now, most schools ask none of these questions, yet every time I've had the opportunity to create this kind of opportunity at all levels of education, it turns into intense lifelong learning, and then that spreads to wanting to learn more, to participate more directly in shaping the places where they live. When kids own and embrace an idea, it becomes a way of life for them that plants seeds in their parents' lives as well. Schools must be laboratories to experiment with new ideas and not be afraid of making mistakes. You know, that's the big killer, you know, fear base. Oh, God forbid we make a mistake. To me, the most pleasing things of the last year is that Fine Home Building magazine ran an issue on the 25 most important houses of the century, including places like Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Waters. In there, they wrote me letters, said, you'll be take a look at page 56. And there was the integral urban house that I did with students in 1974, just asking those questions. Well, how can we buy this house we bought for $8,000 in West Berkeley? And because that's where the good soil was, and we wanted to grow food. And how can we cut it off from Safeway? How can we cut it off from PG&E? How can we cut it off from East Bay Utilities District? You know, to what extent can we really close the loops and measure the flows? And I was really pleased. They said that was the beginning of green, and gave us that award. So being involved in designing and creating the places where you live and work is civic engagement, taking civic initiative. Last week, a group called City Repair from Portland spoke at the College Marin in our series. And what they do is they just created gatherings in neighborhoods with no agenda other than getting neighbors to know each other. They built trust, which allowed them to become creative and tackle neighborhood issues. They decided that the neighborhood lacked a commons, so why not turn neighborhood street intersections into a commons? Paint and decorate them, build portable structures, hold festivals and neighborhood events, and divert traffic when there were common uses. Was it against the law? Yeah, sure. But if laws go unquestioned and we don't take the initiative, nothing changes. The people participating in these activities went to the transportation bureaucrats who said, you can't do this. But they did it anyhow. Then they wound up at the city council, who, after a long dance, changed their own views. And now Portland has more than 80 intersections that are part-time community plazas. So when enough people unify their vision, leaders listen and things change. You know, we used to call it civil disobedience. I mean, I went from being a complete outlaw builder with 300 violations against the place that I founded, now called the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. And 2 weeks later, I was the chief code enforcement officer for the state of California, the California state architect, because Jerry Brown heard about it. And he said, hey, this is a guy who's got guts. We need bureaucrats who are not bureaucrats, who are really going to challenge the system. And Gavin Newsom here, much the same. Not quite Jerry Brown, but he's all right. There are many groups working in their own way, like City Repair. The Marin Bicycle Coalition worked successfully to obtain federal funding for major improvements in bike access. And before that, they worked with a number of neighborhoods to drastically increase bike ridership to schools through working closely with the community, and then with the Public Works Department once there was neighborhood consensus. Also in Marin, Marin Organics has worked with schools to increase organic food grown in Marin on school menus to about 25%. While we focus on the big bad global news, there are thousands of hopeful stories of local initiative that can inspire us to get involved and make a difference where we live. For me, the most exciting and important part of our mission at the Center for Regenerative Design is to energize the huge base of under 30s and get them involved in changing their communities through civic initiative, through the political process, and through direct action in insisting on decisions and solutions which address our rapidly changing environment. Another generation of visionaries gave us a great gift of preserving unique environments and open space. Now, you guys, we need a generation who changes the design, the technology, and habitual practices of our daily lives, how we eat, grow our food, end the stranglehold of the automobile, recycle waters and waste, produce energy locally, insist on housing they can afford to live in close to work, and reestablish local artisan and craftspeople with the knowledge, tools, and local materials that replace dependency on globalization. Only civic initiative and local public political action can tackle the problem of creating relevant, inspiring, integrated public education. Okay, last week we saw that Americans seem to want to change at the national level. That was encouraging, but it's not enough. Democracy is not alive and well nationally or locally, nor is our planet. All change is local, so let's bring it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Sim. Sim talked about the bigger questions related to education and society and culture. I'd like to focus a little bit on the broader context of green campuses and then go into more detail of the work we're doing at the Center for Regenerative Design at the College of Marin. So in the bigger picture, there's a profound shift happening in college and university campuses. And this is about the greening of colleges that is taking place at many levels, including academia, operations, administrations, community, and outreach. So it's everything from facilities, lights, energy, to courses, to landscaping, and to the connection between the campus and their local communities. And so the question then is, why is this important? I think some of the key reasons include that the next generation of leaders that are coming along are right now in colleges and universities, and this is really the training grounds for that leadership. And students and faculty administrators are having daily exposures to these new ideas, be they renewable energy, local food production, interdisciplinary courses. As Sim mentioned, it's really becoming a way of life. And the more we can make it normal as part of the educational process, the more we can then take it outside of the college campus and into the community. They're really living labs, and it's really a place to experiment and to make mistakes and to try new ideas. It's really the best idea. And in the colleges and universities throughout the country that are really experimenting, you see that much of it is actually student-led. They get together in student clubs or in organizations and say, why don't we try this, why don't we try that? Of course, there's a certain percentage of failures, but again, that's where the experimentation comes along. The other reason is that college is really a built-in community model. It's the one time in our lives where we really get to have a very tight-knit group of friends and communities. And then if we can take it beyond the college campus after we finish there, then we can extend it beyond the campus. And that's where I think a lot of us are missing, is that sense of camaraderie and community that often is in the college community and then sort of goes away. Often when you ask people some of the best times in their lives, it happens to be during their college years. So then what are the trends in college campuses? One of them is that we see a real drive towards hiring campus sustainability coordinators. Now, these are folks that they're 65 right now, full-time paid sustainability coordinators in the U.S. in colleges and universities. And they're really responsible for looking at everything from the facilities side of things, to the energy, to the water, to the food, to how the whole operations of the college works. They also work some with the academic departments. Campus climate neutral programs is a key area. I just came back last month from the ASHE, which is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Ed. This is really the nexus organizations in terms of greening college campuses. And they're moving full steam ahead in promoting how do we become climate neutral. And I'll give some examples in a little bit. LA Community College District was the first district in the U.S. to generate its own electricity. This just came out in the email news circle last week. They're installing 1 megawatt solar panels at each of its 9 campuses. And eventually they want to use the excess PV to power hydrogen fuel cell for nighttime loads. This is the kind of bold measures that I think we need to take. And the more of the leadership that we get from these colleges, be they community colleges or private colleges, liberal arts, or larger universities, then they start setting the tempo and the example, say, if they can do it, we can do it. Lane Community College in Eugene has set a goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2050. And 4 University of Wisconsin campuses are set to become energy independent by 2012. The Wisconsin initiative came right from the top, from the governor's office, and they made this their goal. And many, many colleges are now setting a goal of net zero greenhouse gas emissions. College of the Atlantic, which is a small liberal arts college in Maine, Carleton College in Oberlin, where David Orr, of course, has had a big influence in moving them in that direction. A couple of events that are happening that are going to be real huge in the college and university arena. One is the Campus Climate Challenge. This is basically being led by Billy Parrish. And they want to challenge young people at colleges and high schools to win 100% clean energy for their schools. It's a part of a project from the Energy Action Coalition, and they're going to get hundreds, if not thousands, of students and colleges involved in this initiative. And the goal is to have zero-emission campuses that lead to a clean energy future. And they're also working with MTV and a whole of the youth movement to get the awareness out there. Sustainability degree programs. Many schools are going for sustainability degrees at the BA level, at the master's level, even at the PhD level. Prescott College has a PhD in sustainability studies now, the first one. Arizona State has one as well. New College. And there are also several green MBA programs. Presidio School of Management here in San Francisco has a green MBA program. Dominican University of California is now starting a brand new green MBA program there. And other universities are moving in that direction. So, again, it's how to shift the silos that Sim mentioned in terms of being so restricted to one discipline and be able to cover many disciplines by offering these degree programs. Chico State happens to have an eco-literacy chair department. It's an endowed chair, and the responsibility of that person is to kind of take the comments from all of the different departments and incorporate sustainability into the curriculum. We're going to be doing a workshop at the College of Marin next spring with Jeffrey Chase, who's going to do the same thing. Now, Jeff Chase and Peggy Bartlett are going around the country doing these workshops at different colleges and universities, working with faculty and administrators to show ways in which they can incorporate sustainability into their courses. And for schools that have a sustainability requirement, they put little green leaves, so some designation next to each course that can then count toward that eco-literacy requirement. So in Marin, we have the College of Marin and Dominican University of California. And at the College of Marin, we have the Center for Regenerative Design. Sim mentioned our website, greenmarin.net. Sim and myself are the co-directors. We started our work in January of this year. And our mission is really to be a catalyst and a bridge for College of Marin, Dominican College of California, Marin County, and local organizations. There's a lot of work going on in the campus at the College of Marin. I'll let Dr. White and Rob talk about the specifics on that. But if we can be the gateway, if we can be the catalyst in the work that's going on in the college and working with our community initiatives, working with the solar companies, working with the green businesses to get people involved and find out how they can participate, I think we're achieving something very effective. We are sponsoring a whole series of public lectures and roundtables and working with the regeneration plans. And when we look at a college campus, there are really 10 systems that we're really looking at. And these apply not just to college campuses, but also to any community. They include energy, water, the built environment, material resources and waste reuse, food, land regeneration, transportation, health and well-being, academics and culture, and the community. So it really involves taking these 10 systems and seeing in which way, what are the relationships between each one of them, and in which ways can we develop courses and initiatives and programs to get students, faculty, and the community involved in them. So we started our workshops last March. We started actually having working meetings with local organizations to figure out what it is they want and in what way could our center enhance what they're doing, how we could work together. And from those meetings, we started our roundtables in the early spring, and they range from different topics, from transportation, green economy, eco-literacy, natural capital, and sustainable community. Kevin Danaher was there, one of them. And the whole idea was to get a whole panel of leaders in these fields, present their views shortly, and then really get into the dialogue with the attendees. This year, we've started a new series, and we're focusing more on people and their stories. Our idea is to figure out how did individual citizens, some higher profile, some less so, get involved in these ideas and how they're implementing them in their lives. So we had the Blunk-Barnett family, who are neighbors of Sims in West Marin, tell their story of how they grow their own food and vegetables, how they homeschool their kids, how they decided as a family to go and pick up the garbage in Tomales Bay and then did a beautiful sculpture out of it that won some prize in the local event there in their town. We also had Michelle Kaufman last October, who designs and builds the green modular homes, Mark Lakeman that Sim mentioned, and then upcoming we have John Francis who will be coming up. Sim is also going to speak, Charles McGlashan, who's our supervisor, Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration, and Peter Calthorpe, who's an architect and designer. So again, our whole idea is to bring these people on board, have them share their stories, and then have a real dialogue between the speakers and the audience as a way to get ideas on how we can take action in these different events. So with that, I will pass it on to Dr. White. Thank you.
Good afternoon to all of you who are here on a Sunday afternoon enjoying this wonderful conference. It's really been quite an exciting period in time at the College of Marin, beginning in 2004 when the Marin County taxpayers voted for a $249.5 million facilities bond, general obligation bond. And of course, you're familiar with bonds because you've probably had an opportunity, if, at least if you live in California, to vote for these schools, colleges, and university bonds. One just recently was on the state ballot, Proposition 1D, which passed. But with the passage of the bond, it became very important for those of us who really believe in green and sustainability. Marin County is one of the most green or greenest of California. The Board of Trustees voted a resolution that would require that all of our consultants, all of our architects, all of our construction and program management firms would be green and LEED certified. We have been able to accomplish that and more. And when I say more, it's because the resolution was to become a living document, not just a political statement, but was to truly be implemented. The creation of the Center for Regenerative Design has been one of the ways the College of Marin has been able to incorporate the concept of green buildings and a green curriculum. And in linking the opportunity with the bond campaign, the bond projects, the bond modernization, the College of Marin has been able to revive, re-energize, and revitalize environmental studies, other sustainability programs, everything from landscaping to providing opportunities for education for the broader Marin community and county through the lecture series and roundtables of the Center for Regenerative Design. This has been a great growing process and a great learning curve for those in the institution, be they faculty, staff, administrators, and students for that matter, about what these principles are and how important it is to be in a position to be a leader, how important it is to be in a position to model best practices. And that is the goal, the big goal of the College of Marin. As we are one of 72 community college districts in the state, we believe it's important to model best practices. And while Los Angeles, LA Community College District has implemented policies and a program and solar energy systems that could take them off the grid, we consider that as a great model to follow. They just beat us first and got there first. So to talk a little bit about how our consultants are working with us in terms of greening the buildings, the facilities at College of Marin consist of two campuses. One campus in Kentville, which is approximately 73 or so acres. Another campus up north in Novato, which is 333.3 acres. The campus in Novato is a little younger, but it was built in the late 70s. The Kentville campus, very historic campus, was built in 1926. Needless to say, each of the campuses had extreme facilities conditions that were a product of an assessment on our facilities, which more or less was the precursor to needing to pass the bond. Rob Bartholomew, who's sitting to my left, is one of the principal architects for our district architect, Steinberg Group, who's working with us to design our buildings, to design our new green campuses, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that. I really believe that it is important for the college to be a role model, universities to be role models in helping our society understand these important principles of sustainability, zero emissions. It's very important that we're at the forefront to provide training and education for eco-literacy, whether an individual student plans to start his or her own business, or if they're seeking curriculum that will lead to a higher degree. It is our goal at the college to be in a position to do this, and I'm very proud that we're at the point in our own development and our own evolution, if you will, to accomplish these very important things. And with that said, I'll turn it to Rob Bartholomew.
Good afternoon. The goals, principles, and guidelines then was that document that we share with the broader community, the design professionals, those at the college that are implementing the program. How do we go about doing that? Similarly, this group at the table has been involved in it as well. And so it created an indication of what the purpose of the document is, the initiatives involved. Talked about goals. What are we trying to achieve, and what are the principles that can help to support that? And then the guidelines. What do we share with the design professionals, all of us in the community that can implement it? And we organized that into site, building, and building interiors. And lastly, making sure that there was a wealth of knowledge that came with that. One of those being on Sim's contribution, what is a green campus? What is sustainability? Andreas helped with some references to what sustainable sources can we turn to for more information. That guidelines piece started by bringing together the stakeholders. Sim talked earlier about that collaborative piece. This is a collaborative process. We cannot come in as architects, as educators alone, and decide on what best needs to be done. It needs to be a collaborative process. And looking at that as we go through each of these steps, one project, what are the influences on those projects, and then how does each project learn from the other, the cyclical process, so that each time we have the ability to learn from the prior. So quickly looking at those goals, principles, and guidelines, documents that had six major categories or goals, principles that helped to support those goals, and then additionally, I just wanted to call out two of those goals in particular that really highlighted an effort of sustainability at the campus was number 5 and 6, steward natural resources wisely and embody sustainability at all levels and processes, and lastly, promote innovation and continuous improvement. I'm not going to ask you to read through this. This is some of the contents of that document. Those in red are those that I think are definitely the ones for our design professionals, that this, you must do this. These are things that will put us on the right road. Those that are green are those areas that some proper techniques, methodologies, types of spaces that can be created can create an environment where that can be continued. And as this is an example of those guidelines then, not only indicating in this case here on bicycle circulation, what it is, how to guide the design teams in prospering or creating the environment for bicycle circulation, but also creating what we call these what-ifs. Those things that weren't bond expenditures, couldn't possibly be afforded today, but what are the what-ifs, those things that could be endeavored by the college in the future, by the community in the future, as we all come together. And I'm being given the zero sign here. And then certainly those giving examples of how that can be implemented. Some things that I'd like to look back on that we could do differently, maybe that can come through some question and answer. Thank you.
Yeah. We have about 5 minutes for questions and answer questions. Is it? Is it possible for a campus already under construction to incorporate any of these principles? I'll give you my answer, which is, I mean, there is a curve that we can show that from the conceptual stage, you know, through what we call design development, working systems out, and then in the construction documents and so on, the real value is up front, and that's why collaboration is so important. After that, the train has left the station, and all you're doing is playing catch up, and maybe you can add a few little goodies here and there. But to me, this is the most important part of it. Is you have to have a vision and agreement and consensus, build it early in the process, or else all it is, green becomes a simple a series of add-ons to something that. Yeah, that's how I see it. If Rob wants to add to that.
One of the things I wanted to add to it is that in any college environment, you always have trouble getting people involved as you're getting this going. As you're starting to say, okay, what are the programmatic things we need to look at? What are the facility things we need to study? And people are really reserved, real pretty quiet, and it's not until you put it in their face and say, this is what we're doing, that suddenly it's like, whoa. I haven't had a chance to be involved in that. And I think that, you know, as Sim's talking here, the collaborative process, we need to make sure that we seek out that information up front, that involvement up front. And it is difficult. Believe me, we're running into it at the College of Marin, too. The level of interest that's coming towards the end of our process here, rather than, you know, more that real collaborative effort was being made, is and could have a potential slowdown in the project. We want to avoid that. But at the same time, there may be things that are implementable that don't necessarily have to involve or slow down any program that can be implemented more on an operations basis rather than on the facility side.
We have four projects, major projects, that have been approved or in line for design development. One of them is kind of the precursor and is already, the train has left the station, and that's the PE complex. The truth of the matter is Sim is absolutely right. It has to start at the design development phase. And you need someone in your organization who can articulate, communicate, and help drive the consensus, because you're not going to have it initially either way you go. But it needs to happen at the beginning for the best optimum implementation.
I just want to add one quick example. I was involved in doing the education program for a LEED project, except they didn't decide to make this project a LEED building until about halfway through or a little before, and then they said, oh, we want to make it LEED. It was very, very difficult, very expensive, and ended up missing many, many points, because for LEED, for green buildings, you need to document a lot of the stuff that goes on, and they hadn't done that. So all the more reason, even in a specific building case, how important it is to make that decision way up front in terms of cost savings.
I just want to add one word, too, and it comes back to my talk about how it has to be civil initiative. I think one of the things that, one of the metrics at the College of Marin that I found particularly discouraging was that out of 9,000 students, about 100 voted for the campus government. And that, to me, is an indication that there isn't sufficient student involvement. We worked at the Danza Foothills District. The Environmental Studies Department, which is a really innovative department, wanted a new building. The campus administration said no. Later on, they passed a bond issue. But it was student government that financed us to do the initial conceptual design, which was done in a very series of open meetings. And I want to acknowledge Dave Deppen, who was our project manager, who saw that project through. And it is, at this point, the only gold LEED building in the community college system. But if those students hadn't said to administration, okay, we'll use our own money to get this done, and we'll hire our own people to do it, That's, I think, would make your job easier sometimes. Am I wrong?
There's a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm currently a co-director at the Campus Center for Appropriate Technology at Humboldt State. And
okay.
We've done a lot of initiatives during the past few years, and one of the things that we just were able to do is hire a sustainability coordinator. But our next phase is to create a broad-based campus sustainability program, and I'm wondering what your folks' thoughts are on that, or whether it'd be better, whether our energy would be better spent perhaps implementing the Campus Climate Initiative.
Well, what do you mean by broad-based? What's your vision of a broad-based campus sustainability effort?
It's more of an umbrella organization as opposed to the disparate clubs and programs that operate as of right now. There's also been talk of maybe creating a campus sustainability committee.
I have something to say. Just a comment. The UC system does have a collaborative of all the sustainability coordinators that are really student-run. So that's an organization that I would definitely tap into. And I think that, of the schools that I've been in touch with, that there's ecology clubs or sort of individual clubs that, because they get so much student interest, it sort of becomes its own catalyst for the campus. So the key, I think, is not so much to focus on what the original structure is. Each campus needs to create it organically into how it's going to work in its own campus. And then you'll come up with your own formula as to what works at Humboldt. I know Humboldt is really keen on the whole green building arena, and they've contacted the Emerging Green Builders, which is part of USGBC, US Green Building Council, and they're really excited about it. So I would encourage just sort of figuring out how organically it can create and then build from there.
Well, also, I'd like to acknowledge that the Center for Appropriate Technology and so on, and SEED have been literal seeds for what's happening. We're working on a green hotel in Eureka, where a team from Humboldt, folks from Humboldt State, associated with Humboldt State, beat out Marriott and the rest of these standard template hospitality outfits, and we're building a green hotel. We're designing a green hotel for the Eureka waterfront that is gonna, and what it's doing is educating the folks in Eureka who are not quite up to the level that what Arcata is. So,
time's up.
Time's up.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you.
I think our time is up here.